Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and it's my pleasure and privilege to present to you today, once again, Dr. Nick Begich, along with Gene Manning, the co-author of Angels Don't Play This Harp, with two A's, published in softcover by the Earth Pulse Press, copyright 1995. Dr. Begich, welcome back to our airwaves.
Good to be back with you.
Now, we've been talking about Project HARP, the revolution in military affairs, sort of a mall, one-stop, one-size-fits-all approach to military strategic weaponry. And we've been talking about the potential applications of Project HARP to mass mind control, utilizing the electromagnetic spectrum to produce a number of horrific effects on human beings, large numbers of human beings on the ground. On page 189 of your book, you describe, once again, some of the potential applications of this technology. Quoting on from Angels Don't Play This Harp on page 189, and the report referred to here is one we were talking about near the end of our previous, the previous half of this interview. This is the Radio Frequency Radiation Dosimetry Handbook put out by the United States Air Force. You say, the report went on to describe a system which, again, pointed to the HARP project. The report called for the development of, and then you quote, a rapidly scanning RFR system which could provide an effective stun or kill capability over a large area. System effectiveness will be a function of waveform, field intensity, pulse width, repetition frequency, and carrier frequency. The system can be developed using tissue and whole animal experimental studies coupled with mechanisms and waveform effects research. Dr. Begich, that sounds intimidating enough even when one does not completely understand all the concepts involved, and what I'm going to ask you to do is to elucidate on that for us.
All right, just let's look at it in a, with a different model. Let's look at the human body as a system. First, let's think of ourselves as energy, and then atoms, and then molecules, and then compounds, and then body components, and then body. And when you look at it in that way, you start to realize that you can affect the system on any one of those levels. I mean, you can affect the system, obviously, physically. You can run a bullet through someone and know that there's damage to tissue. But on the opposite end of the spectrum, on the subtle energy end of the spectrum, you can affect the activity of atoms, which then translates into an effect on molecules all the way through the system, causing then chemical changes and then manifestations in the full body. What the military has recognized for years is that the ability to impact with electromagnetic mediums, particularly pulsed radio frequency, this entire energy system of the human body is very, very possible. In fact, it's already been developed in a number of not just healing technologies, but killing technologies by the United States military. What we've heard about is in terms of discussions in the national media about non-lethal weapons technology is really non-lethal as a misnomer, because in many instances they can be quite lethal. In fact, by establishing a pulse rate out of rhythm, for instance, for heart rhythms, can actually induce heart attack at distance. And a document that points to this and actually discusses it, Low-Intensity Conflict in Modern Technology, produced by Maxwell Air Force Base, with a foreword by Newt Gingrich, supporting this kind of technology for low-intensity conflicts. The problem is many of these technologies, in terms of their use, also have domestic application, and there were three U.S. Department of Justice meetings to discuss exactly that, transferring this technology and this kind of technology for domestic use. So here you have HARP on a very large scale, having the capability of operating as a non-lethal weapon, and at the same time presenting the science on a small scale with smaller weapon systems the same capability. So whether large or small, the capability is there. In fact, 60 Minutes last year demonstrated one of these weapon systems on a small scale for use in the battlefield for inducing flu-like symptoms using a pulsed microwave.
You mentioned that one of the effects that can be produced is something called cyclotronic resonance. Before we explain that concept completely, you also mentioned, by way of touching on the potential mind control applications of Project HARP, that the Navy's done some experimentation and actually were able to utilize that, the Project HARP, but cyclotronic resonance, to alter the body chemistry in such a way as to create or to precipitate enough lithium in the brain to, in effect, administer lithium treatments, which is a physiological approach to psychotherapy, by altering the body electromagnetically.
Right. Well, what has been learned is that each element and each chemical has a resonant frequency that it corresponds to. And by using cyclotron resonance, or harmonizing, if you will, an external oscillator like radio frequency, but what you can do is you can create sort of the illusion to the body that there's actually a chemical in place, because it mistakes this unique electromagnetic signature for the chemical itself. So the body then goes into its normal reactions as if the chemical had been ingested. So you have a small amount of chemical in place naturally in the body anyway, and then what happens is the signal comes in, it magnifies the effect, and what you have is all of the toxic effects of having introduced to the body a large amount of the chemical. And yet when they do the testing, the blood testing or other kinds of tests to determine what the problem is, none of these chemicals show up, and yet all of the effects are there. They become what's called unexplained illnesses, and you know, we can only think back to recent media reports of all the many unexplained illnesses from the Gulf War, and it leads one to believe maybe there is much, much more than even yet meets the eye, although that's slowly and surely being uncovered.
Now, backtracking ever so slightly, the term cyclotronic resonance is the mechanism for actually electromagnetically altering the body chemistry. What does the term mean specifically?
Well, to keep it simple, I mean, I think what we're really talking about here is the idea, again, of creating a resonance effect or a harmonizing effect that then causes significant changes. Now, what we know about cyclotron resonance as it relates to HARP specifically, that is one of the... hold on a second, Dave. I'm going to take a break. Basically, when we look at cyclotron resonance as it relates to the HARP project, this is one of the desired effects. I mean, they want to create a cyclotron resonance effect, which can be visualized as a corkscrewing kind of motion to the radio frequency energy as it moves up from the transmitters. If you can picture a field of antennas and firing them in sequence to cause this kind of corkscrewing sort of effect as they move up. Now, what they found is when that cyclotron resonance radio frequency energy actually strikes magnetic lines of force, the magnetic lines of force surrounding the Earth start from the South Pole and move north to the North Pole, and where it intersects the Earth. What the cyclotron resonance effect does is actually create a corkscrewing motion heading the opposite direction, using the magnetic lines as sort of a guide. And it goes, so the energy goes from north to south around those magnetic lines of force, where the energy is going from south to north. This is how they get a number of the effects for global shielding. But again, one of the concerns that we have is what happens if the cyclotron resonance frequency of that corkscrewing motion happens to correspond to these trace elements, again, present in the human body, and what happens when the energy re-enters the Earth, and how is that energy redistributed? Because, again, our concern is, here's an area of science that crosses the lines between atmospheric physics and physiology, and yet, in HARP, there are no physiologists assigned to the project. There are no people with electrophysiology backgrounds assigned to this very big initiative here in Alaska, and yet these are the very kinds of concerns that ourselves and many others are expressing as having perhaps some of the gravest health consequences.
Among those possibly grave health consequences, and perhaps something that could be deliberately utilized, and you discussed this in Angels Don't Play This Harp, is using some of those principles to alter and to negate the human immune system.
Right, and again, you know, when you think about electromagnetic radiations generally, I mean, you can think about 100 years ago, there was virtually none that weren't naturally created. Then, you know, we came along, mankind, and developed a whole series of technologies dealing with television waves, microwaves, radio frequency waves, all kinds of spectral pollution, if you will. And what we know is the complex interactions of these waveforms and energy forms are having an effect. And the belief now is that these actually degrade the human immune system, increase cancer rates, and there's quite a bit of research now supporting that. Much of that research coming out in just the last couple of years, even after our book was released, we have run into more recent papers bringing in a more conclusive evidence that the assertions we made a couple years ago are even being supported even more so now by current scientific research.
One of the people whose work you mentioned in connection with the effects of electromagnetism and electricity on the body is a fellow named Becker, who wrote a book, as I recall, called The Body Electric.
Right. You know, Becker did some amazing work, and we cite him often in our work because he really does hit the nail on the head, because he understood quite clearly the human body as an electromagnetically mediated system. We all hear about how the nervous system works and how the brain is really a series of electromagnetic interactions, and yet no one has really given much consideration to the idea that these energy exchanges taking place within the human body are in very, very low amperage, and what we're talking about is very little energy, and yet the idea that it only takes some huge hammer to dislodge that energy has found by research to be ridiculous. It can take a very subtle energies, very little energy, provided that it hits the right resonant frequencies to cause quite debilitating effects in human beings. And at the same time, perhaps even some systems have in fact been developed for creating positive health effects in human beings utilizing this same knowledge.
You mentioned that electricity and electromagnetism can be used for healing wounds, surgical incisions, and so forth.
Right, exactly right. And this isn't just our research. This is military research that we cite within the book itself. And what we know is that for instance, for regenerating bone, for expediting healing, a number of effects have been observed that aren't well explained using traditional models of the human body and human physiology. And yet the observations are statistically, clean. They're there. What we do know is that other scientists with the right background in physics and electromagnetics and physiology can explain it quite simply as the natural outgrowth of interaction in these systems. And what we have not allowed for within our modern society is to take into consideration the gross effects of the exposures to these low levels of radiations. I mean, people remember a few years ago hearing about cell phones and some people causing perhaps tumor growth, and there's been a lot of debate about that. The fact of the matter is, in some people who are highly sensitive, that would be an expected outcome. The question becomes, and when they analyze some of these exposures, they analyze them in a vacuum. In other words, they analyze them in isolation from any other electromagnetic field that a person is in. And it's the complex interactions that seem to be lending themselves to some of these problems that are being observed, and it's almost impossible to set a standard, if you will, because in every location, depending on where you are within these fields, might have a direct impact on whether they're going to be dangerous or not dangerous for the person within a given field.
Moving to a speculative element, in Angels Don't Play This, among the things that you analyzed, and I'm going to preface this with some documentation from, once again, the Documents on Disarmament 1978, put out by the United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, returning again to a letter from then-Secretary of State Cyrus Vance to President Jimmy Carter, on the prohibition of military or any other hostile use of environmental modification techniques. There is an actual quote in Secretary of State Vance's letter to Jimmy Carter where he quotes from the May 18, 1977 Environmental Modification Treaty. And again, we should bear in mind that we're talking now, for the benefit of people who hear this on tape, on January 14, 1997, almost 20 years later. Then Secretary of State Vance writes, Article 2, that's of the treaty, defines the term, quote, environmental modification techniques, unquote, as, again quoting, any technique for changing, through the deliberate manipulation of natural processes, the dynamics, composition, or structure of the Earth, including its biota, lithosphere, hydrosphere, and atmosphere, or of outer space, unquote. The understanding related to this article sets forth the following examples as illustrative of the phenomena that could be caused by the use of such techniques. And people should listen very carefully to the actual quote from the text of the treaty. Earthquakes, and these are the phenomena contemplated, and this is 20 years ago, earthquakes, tsunamis, an upset in the ecological balance of a region, changes in weather patterns, clouds, precipitation, cyclones of various types and tornadic storms, changes in climate patterns, changes in ocean currents, changes in the state of the ozone layer, and changes in the state of the ionosphere. All of these things prohibited by a treaty and implicated in Project HAARP. One of the things that you and your co-author speculate is about the possible application of Project HAARP to seismic phenomena, the creation of earthquakes. And again, people should bear in mind that the very first phenomenon discussed in the actual text of the treaty, reading again, earthquakes, tsunamis, etc.
You know, this is a very important aspect of what we raise and the issues we raise. And you know, I mean, certainly there's room, I think, for speculation. And in this instance, we sort of take all of the facts that we compile and build through the book and cite very clearly. And we say, okay, here we have this body of evidence. And now here we have an instrument capable of injecting a prodigious amount of energy into the ionosphere and into magnetic lines of force, which can be best, metaphorically at least, looked at as the acupuncture meridians of the planet. And the expectation is that this energy in the right frequency might, in fact, trigger these catastrophic kinds of events. Now, let's look at the Earth as it currently sits. And what we know is we have a significant increase in frequency, depth, and intensity of earthquakes over a 30-year period that's been well researched, well diagrammed by a number of institutes around the country and around the world. We also have weather patterns changing dramatically all around the world in terms of long-term and apparently short-term trends for weather changes. And we also have, as we mentioned earlier, the tidal heights in the North Sea, which have gradually increased. All of these things indicate a system that is releasing vastly larger amounts of energy in an unusual and different kind of way. And yet at the same time, what we're about to do is very deliberately inject into that already disturbed system additional man-made energies at pulse rates and frequencies that may in fact trigger other energy releases within that system. One example, when they were doing research at Stanford in the Antarctic of the effects of very low frequency, VLF frequencies, impact with the upper ionosphere and lower magnetosphere, which is about 620 miles above the Earth's surface, what they found is that when the VLF energy entered that region, it actually caused a release of energy already in place there that amplified the signal up to 1,000 times. In other words, a little bit in gave them a huge output. With HARP, what we're concerned about is within certain frequency ranges, they may purposefully or inadvertently trip over some of these triggering frequencies, releasing cascades of energy from natural systems that then trigger geophysical events such as earthquakes, tidal waves, and what have you. These are possibilities within the spectrum of this kind of technology, and our concern is that these issues and these kinds of risks are being taken without proper public debate. Whether or not they occur in one instance or another is not the relevant factor here. The relevant factor is they can occur. They can occur with these kinds of systems based on the research on the books. And the question becomes is, should we blindly or should we allow the military in isolation from good public scrutiny and public accountability pursue this kind of science? We believe that should not be the case, that these systems, these world systems of environment belong to all of us, and likewise they should be debated in terms of anything that's going to interact within them. The reason for that weather and environmental modification treaty was to avoid just these kinds of instances that are now taking place under the guise of a research project by the U.S. Navy and U.S. Air Force in Alaska.
Two speculative elements in connection with the possible seismic applications of this project that you discuss, reading now from page 78, among the previous projects that were undertaken by way of research, looking at ways to cause earthquakes as well as to detect them was part of the project codenamed Prime Argus decades ago. The money for that came from the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, now under the acronym ARPA. In addition to that, you also discuss a project in which a large number of copper needles, were released into the atmosphere, and you speculate concerning the possibility that that may have had something to do with a catastrophic earthquake in Alaska in 1964.
That's true. The needles were put up with the correspondence again is that, you know, we then had this earthquake. But the other thing that we found, and this is an interesting observation, is that when the Great Alaskan earthquake took place in 1964, it actually created an ionospheric disturbance. In other words, there was an observation made that the ionosphere was greatly disturbed over the seismic area. And the question was, what caused that? Was it an electromagnetic exchange, or was it a shock wave? And the belief was is that it was an electromagnetic exchange, indicating that the mechanism by which earthquake energy is released might, in fact, be related to electromagnetic fields and magnetic field lines naturally occurring in the Earth. So when you take those things and consider them, you know, this is a very, very complex system. We are holding a grain of sand on the beach of knowledge when we start to evaluate the Earth as a system. We like to think that we're far advanced, just in the same way 200 years ago people used to think their science was far advanced. The fact of the matter is we are children playing in God's creation, if you will, if you'll allow me that, in a way that might in fact be quite dangerous. Our toys have become very sophisticated, very complex, and yet we're plowing ahead. And the unfortunate part is this move forward is being done in secret and most cases, but certainly by folks that don't necessarily have the greater interests of the human race in mind as their mission. The U.S. military's mission is to build the best weapons technology and weapons systems capable of defense, and oftentimes the mission gets lost in terms of what it is that we're trying to save or trying to preserve.
Your book is subtitled Advances in Tesla Technology. Nikola Tesla, the brilliant inventor who actually was the person who developed radio, although Marconi got the patents, Tesla died in 1943. Much of his research is still classified, and one of the more famous things he did was to use mechanical resonance to cause a small earthquake in New York City. I'm wondering if perhaps electromagnetic resonance might also have something to do with possible seismic weaponry applications of Project HARP.
You know, Tesla asserted also that you could do it through any oscillation method, not just mechanical oscillations or tapping, if you will. In that case, he was tapping on a steel substructure of a building, causing a seismic action to occur. The idea was that you could do this by electromagnetically stroking the Earth, if you will, in such a way as to hit the resonant frequency or a corresponding frequency that the Earth naturally has, causing that to amplify. It can be the old, in physics class, people may remember the idea of the troops marching across the bridge, and, you know, it wasn't the compilation of the footsteps, it was the frequency, the pulse rate, that then set up a situation where the bridge eventually collapsed. The idea that you could do the same thing with the Earth was Nikola Tesla's theory, and so here we have Tesla, who understood these principles in a very, very sophisticated way, one that has yet to be truly understood in the same way. And yet here we have the military playing with technology with sort of half the deck of knowledge and hoping that they're right. And I think that is the mistake. And, you know, and I don't want to be overly critical of the scientists in the project, because I think many of them are, if not the majority of them, are well-intentioned. It's just they hold narrow specialties. Each of us do. I mean, that's just the nature of a complex world. But I think we need to see more interaction by a broader range of scientists unassociated with the military-industrial complex on these kinds of weapon systems. Revolutions in military affairs wasn't something we invented. That's something the military invented, and that's something that they're headed for. Electromagnetic warfare is the 1990s and the next millennium military machine for the United States and most of the world. And before we jump off that cliff, I think we need a great deal of public debate, both within the country and without.
Dr. Begich, as we approach the last 5 minutes of the interview, I want to talk about some of the possible negative unintended side effects of this project. We've talked about weather alteration. We've talked about some of the possible negative effects on living organisms in the Earth. One of the really terrifying and almost unimaginable things that you and your co-author discuss is the possibility, and again, we're dealing with a speculative element here, that the applications of Project HARP might actually result in a slowing down of the Earth's rotation, creating, among other things, earthquakes.
You know, that's it is speculative on our part. I mean, we draw from the research of a lot of scientists, and we actually quote a scientist who was suggesting that might in fact be the case. The idea that HARP could create cataclysmic events has been mentioned by a number of independent scientists looking at this technology. You know, more than that, it's the whole concept. HARP is a very small part of a very big initiative, electromagnetic warfare as a concept. And I guess what we're saying, and what we're really saying to people at this point, is there are extreme illustrations of what these technologies can yield, including creation and generation of earthquake activity. And I guess our concern is at this juncture, looking back at the Carter administration, Zbigniew Brzezinski believed that these kinds of technologies would exist at approximately this time. You can look at his book Between Two Ages to see that. And he was certainly in a position to know, and what he suggested is no matter who was in power at the time, the temptation to use these technologies would be greater than the good sense to restrain. And I think he's giving a testimony on what he knew of the insiders in politics would really want to use these kinds of weapons technologies, even though they did present significant risks if it did further their political ends.
We should mention, for the benefit of younger members of the audience, that Zbigniew Brzezinski was Jimmy Carter's national security advisor. Two other possible cataclysmic and to the un- uninitiated, almost unimaginable side effects. And again, these are speculative elements that you and your author, co-author touch on. One is that the projection of electromagnetic radiation into the upper atmosphere might overload what some scientists feel is an already taxed upper atmosphere, and that this might result in an actual short-circuiting of the Earth and atmosphere.
That, you know, that has come up. In fact, it's interesting is that when Senator Stevens first went to the U.S. Senate floor and talked about this issue, he talked about it in terms of tapping the ionosphere in the energy in place there, tapping it as if it were an energy reserve that we could then utilize that energy on the Earth. In other words, deliberately arcing it down to the Earth. The concern is that if that were the case, that perhaps short-circuiting would occur, that would cause, you know, some devastating cataclysmic event. And again, you know, here's a U.S. senator standing on the floor of the Senate talking about it, and in fact he even said it was just like it came out of the chapters of Jules Verne, and those are his words. And yet, here we are at the brink of a new initiative. Here we are with the very beginnings of a weapons technology being developed here, a Star Wars technology, a ground-based system, and that is the direction of Star Wars. That's what came out in the end of the presidential debates, and that is what we have in Alaska, the beginning of a very large initiative. It's small now, it's early in the game, and it's time for Americans to wake up and recognize that these technologies are here and begin to take a position on them, whether for or against. It certainly deserves the kind of debate that democratic systems not only allow for, but insist upon.
The last, and this is once again a speculative item, item that you and your co-author discuss, and that is another possible devastating side effect of Project HARP, and again, this is speculative, would be to cause a shift in the Earth's electromagnetic poles.
Yeah, and this is, you know, there's some concern that that's in fact already underway just by natural systems, that there's already a change in the way magnetic field lines are operating, and in the pulse rate of the Earth is rising. That has been documented by many. The idea that the system is already in a state of flux, and here we are on the brink of throwing in more energy to a system that may already be at the point of chaos, may already be at the point of snapping. Where is that proverbial straw on the camel's back of the electromagnetic Earth? We think that this may, in fact, be it. And it's one experiment, one set of tests that perhaps we can just do without.
Dr. Begich, we're down to about the last minute or so, a minute plus of our interview. Besides writing their congressperson, encouraging them to support physician-assisted suicide, many members of the listening audience might be overwhelmed and depressed by this. I'd like to ask you to perhaps briefly give some advice to members of the listening audience on what they can do to perhaps alleviate or ameliorate the situation, and also tell them where they can order the book and also access your website.
Okay, in terms of the issue, really do take it to your congressman. I think that is important, and also the head of the chairman of the defense subcommittees on defense and defense appropriations. The issue is being debated by many Europeans. Our work is out in Europe and Japan as well. To get more information that's freely available, our internet site at www.earthpulse.com is a good place to go.
Repeat that one more time, please.
It's www.earthpulse.com. And also you can get information for ordering our book at 907-249-9111.
All righty, it's been a fascinating, informative, and perhaps for some terrifying interview. Dr. Nick Begich, thank you so much for your time. It has been my pleasure to interview Dr. Nick Begich, who along with Gene Manning is the co-author of Angels Don't Play This Harp, softcover edition, Earth Pulse Press, copyright 1995. For Nick Begich, this is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.